This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And you're listening to the First 50 Pages. Kelsey, what is your reading resolution for 2020?
Well, you know, I've got the usual, like, New Year's resolutions of, you know, eat better, work out, like everybody else does. But for my reading resolutions this year, I'm challenging myself to branch out to read more genres, especially more nonfiction. I always have goals one. Like I'm going to do it, but I'm not great at it. So I figured making it an official resolution could maybe help me out this year.
Do you keep track of the books that you read?
I am not good at that at all. I have like a little notebook that I always keep in my purse or in my backpack, but I'd be lying if I said I actually kept track of everything that I read.
I'm in the same boat with you. And my reading resolution for this year is to track my reading. I know that some people keep track of the number of books that mm-hmm. they read, and I feel like that sets me up for failure because I don't finish a lot of books. But I figure this year, if I track what I'm reading, then I'll have much more of a sense of accomplishment in that just because I didn't finish a book doesn't mean I wasn't reading and exploring and trying new things. So my goal is to track what I'm reading. Even if I didn't finish it, I'll just put did not finish, and maybe you know why.
Yeah, maybe like, do I want to come back to this one? Yes. Was this not the right time for me to be reading this particular book?
So that is my goal. Not necessarily to, but also to be intentional with my reading. Mm-hmm. I think just to make time for reading every day.
Kind of make it more of a priority.
And yes, just to set that time aside because it's just not going to magically happen. And as busy as our lives get, it is hard sometimes to really make reading a priority. But that's my goal this year, to make reading a priority and to track what I'm reading.
Hmm, that's kind of a good idea. I might have to actually use the notebook.
There are some people that I've talked to that have done or do the Goodreads reading challenge. And if you're not familiar with that, I know you are, Kelsey, but if our listeners are not familiar with that, it started in 2011 and that year, there were 149,716 participants, and Goodreads actively started promoting their challenge to its users in 2015. By 2019, over 3 million people pledged to read an average of 59 books before the end of the year. And I'm like, 59 books, that just sounds like a lot to me. I mean, it's not a crazy
That's more than a book a week.
It is. Most people pledge to read between 1 and 24 books. So that 59 number is skewed by some very enthusiastic readers. But there are people who set themselves up with this number of books goal. That just never worked for me. But one thing that made me feel better is that in 2018, only 16% of participants in the Goodreads challenge actually completed it.
So like how we leave unfinished books, we leave some unfinished reading challenges out there as well.
Yes, and only 21% of the books pledged.
Okay.
So
that seems a little bit more realistic and attainable.
It's kind of like what New Year's resolutions are, right? You set yourself up and then you fail. But Kelsey and I in this episode are going to help you with some ways to keep your New Year's resolution to read more.
So in an essay for The Million, staff writer Hannah Gerson discusses ways that, you know, can kind of help you keep your New Year's resolution to read more. So, of course, you know, we had to do more research and you don't just want to take our word for it on how to best, you know, keep your resolutions. So we kind of also pulled, you know, our own tips from Hannah, but also, you know, different suggestions from articles on Book Riot and other, you know, different sources. We can't not have the research.
We scoured for the best suggestions and we're bringing them to you today.
So hopefully like at least one or two of these will help you be a little bit better about keeping your resolution to read more. So kind of one that I really liked right off the bat was that, you know, we've kind of touched on it, that we need to, you know, schedule our reading time, that we need to make it part of our routine. I mean, it seems simple to, you know, make a plan in advance, you know, like look at your day, see where you can fit it in, and kind of, in one of the articles I found, they referenced, you know, like treat your book like a person who you've agreed to meet. You know, like you don't want to be late and you don't want to flake on them.
I love that. Yeah. I really do. I'm going to use that. Like, it's an appointment in my calendar, me and my book.
What's that 5 o'clock appointment time? That's a date for me and my book.
Yeah, seriously, put it in your calendar. Really love that, because it isn't magically going to happen. We have to really schedule your reading time and be consistent. I think that's how you build habits with anything, but with reading too. One that I don't know if I could follow this or not, get up earlier. Ooh. Wake up early and make reading the first thing you do for your day. I've never tried that because I like to sleep in. I'm a big fan of sleep.
You use that snooze button, don't you?
Yeah, I set my alarm like 5 times so that I will wake up eventually, but I don't know. Maybe that should be my New Year's resolution. Wake up on the first time that my alarm goes off. But yeah, I just actually heard, I think it was the NPR Life Kit podcast. They were talking about this. One of their experts was sharing, you know, to get up earlier and make that the first thing you do during the day. And I know I do listen to audiobooks sometimes when I get ready.
Okay.
In the morning.
So you just start that before you even start getting ready.
I don't know about sitting and reading a book, because I think I would have a hard time setting that limit. Mm-hmm. Like, because I have to go and do something else. And so I couldn't read just one more chapter or one more page. I'd have to be like, it'd be a hard end. And that would make me sad.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want to put this book down. I just got into this book. But it could be a more gentle way to wake up in the morning, you know, rather than, you know, you just instantly have to hop out of bed after, you know, like a blaring alarm or something like that, kind of having a more gentle movement. Yes. And start to your day.
So it's a suggestion for early birds and early risers and people that wake up and they, but I suppose some people, they wake up and they go work out.
Yeah.
And then they.
Or listen. Some just get up and have a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So this could be a good suggestion for you. I don't think it's going to work for me, but it could be great for you.
And another good one is to turn off social media. I know, that's a pretty taboo thing. We're all pretty attached to our devices. But, you know, we all know that we're on social media too much. I shouldn't say we all are, but I would say probably a fair majority of us. You know, kind of cutting back is a pretty obvious way to find more reading time. But it's kind of easier said than done. A tip that Hannah got from the podcast Hidden Brain during an interview with author Cal Newport said that, you know, he said that you should put your phone in another room when you're reading. So then that way you're not, you know, seeing if the light goes off, if you got a new text or a new notification or anything like that. He emphasized that it is important to put your phone in another room because even if it's turned off, as long as it's nearby, your mind will be distracted by its presence.
I think that's a great tip.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, that's one of their resolutions, to be off social media. Mm-hmm. More, or to set some boundaries or some guidelines for that. But I love that, just to put your phone in another room. I have found that I do a lot of my reading at night. Mm-hmm. I just let my phone go dead.
Yeah.
Then I'm just reading and I'm not distracted by my phone, by social media, by other things.
And it kind of helps you to really, like, you know, shut down your brain in a different way, that you're not still so plugged into all of the chaos of your day of, like, checking email, checking Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, whatever. You can really just kind of, like, shut that down and really unplug, and then you kind of have this nice creative outlet of reading.
We know these are hard things. We know, but they're going to work. They're going to work if you try them. I really believe that. So, turn off social media. Not completely,
yeah.
But set some limits. And I like that. Put your phone in another room while you have intentional and dedicated time to read.
Exactly.
One of the things that I thought was a great suggestion, and I've heard it from several sources, is to always have a book with you. Some of my best reading time comes in waiting rooms. But I do try and always have a book with me. So I tend to have an audiobook in my car. Mm-hmm. I have an audiobook downloaded from Libby. And I tend to carry a book around with me, you know, everywhere I go. So if I am waiting or I'm having lunch break or, you know, lonely lunches by myself sometimes, then I have a book to read. And I get a lot of reading done that way.
Yeah. And I know we told you to just put the phones down, but if you're going to always have a book, you could always use the Libby app as a way that if you've downloaded a book that you can listen to, or, you know, one that if you have a big enough screen on your device, it is a handy way that you probably have your phone on you already that you can kind of easily transition to always having a book with you. If you don't want to carry a print book around, if you're worried about forgetting it somewhere, kind of like I would, you can always just have a book downloaded on your device.
Another tip that I totally embrace and I mean, I do this all the time. Like right now in my tracking of books, I'm reading like 6 different books right now. But so the pro tip is to read several books at once. Sometimes you want to have something that's light and fluffy to read before bed, or a nonfiction book, or you want that science fiction, mystery, romance. Sometimes it's just good to change things up. And so if you're not in the mood for the book you've been reading, even if it's a good book, switch it up and grab something else.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, it can kind of help keep things fresh. I know I tried it out this past year and I was totally prepared that I was going to hate it. I had always been one of those type of readers that I read one book at a time and it was only that book. I didn't even think about any other book until I was done with the book I was reading. But I, you know, kind of oftentimes now, like with working at the library, I have the book club book going on, you know, kind of something light and fluffy, like we said, before bed. I'm not going to be reading any true crime before I go to sleep. Really? You know, in a nonfiction book, you know, in my efforts to read more nonfiction. But it is just kind of a nice way to help keep what you're reading fresh in your mind, that, you know, you're able to kind of really change things up. And it, I guess, keeps the story fresh, that it's new and exciting every time you pick it up, because you're not just staying reading that one book the whole time.
And I think it is important to mix it up and try new things, to step outside of your genre comfort zone. And then not to forget about other kinds of books and reading. So picture books, graphic novels, short stories. When you mix it up, it's just going to, like you said, keep things fresh and interesting. One of the terms that I found during our research, Kelsey, and I love this, was a book hangover.
Oh, that is a good term.
And that is when you finish a great book and you can't find the motivation to move on to the next one. And I'm like, that happens to me so often. I'm like, this book was fantastic. Nothing else is even going to come close to this. I don't want to read a crap book after this because everything is going to be crap. But if you switch it up and go to a different genre, then you eliminate those direct comparisons between books.
And I think that's a huge thing that we don't even realize that we're doing if we read in the same genre constantly. We're just like, oh, this one wasn't as good as this one.
Yeah.
As soon as you say it, you're like, oh, I did compare those two without even consciously doing it.
So there you go. Avoid book hangovers. Switch it up.
And we've already kind of touched on it a little bit, but it is truly important to really set a goal, but maybe, you know, like we've mentioned, not necessarily a numerical one. Like, you don't have to read a certain number of books or read a certain number of minutes. I mean, of course you want to be able to say, I read 50 books this year, but, you know, when it comes to reading, you know, numerical goals can kind of not be as motivating or as easy to tackle as we think.
I think I'm going to be able to say, I partially read 150 books this year. Because you know, I'm tracking it. I'm so excited by the end of the year to find out how many partial books I read.
Maybe count the number of pages, but that would be a numerical goal, so maybe don't do that. But, you know, it can be more satisfying to truly, like, tackle a difficult book, or, you know, maybe you want to tackle a different series or a new genre, that might ultimately be more satisfying than, oh, hey, I checked off 50 books this year.
And I think we lose sight of the fact we set these goals and we lose sight of the fact that we want it to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Reading should be fun. You should get pleasure from reading. It should be an escape or, you know, an adventure or just downtime to relax and reset. So it should be fun.
Yeah, it shouldn't feel like homework at all or this big chore that you have to check off your to-do list.
So I think some other great tips. One that I really liked that I hadn't thought about before. A lot of these things I've heard before, but this was a new one. Don't overschedule your weekends or days off. So let that sink in. We run, we go, we work, and then our weekends are filled with all kinds of other things that we have to do, and we overcommit, and we don't have that downtime to do the things that, you know, we obviously, if you set a goal to read more, you want to read more, but if you don't make time to schedule it, you're not going to get it done. So take some time, take a weekend, and don't overschedule it. Schedule it with reading time, not running around and doing all the things that life requires time.
I think I might have to take this one to heart. I am really guilty of overscheduling every single day off that I have.
I think it's just a natural sort of thing that we do because busy is good, right? Like, busy is, I don't know, a badge of honor sometimes, but it's okay. Give yourself permission to not overschedule your weekends and your days off and to just have a reading day.
And I think a good way to kind of really feed into the whole idea of having a reading day is really creating like a reading nook, whether that's you have a favorite coffee mug that you, you know, make coffee or tea in while you read, or, you know, you have comfy pillows and a blanket or a very specific chair that you like to sit in while you read. I think kind of creating that space that's for you and your reading, I think.
I would love to do that. I'm so jealous of people that, you know, that have these beautiful, like, bay window reading nook. But you can create a reading nook, really, just in a space that works for you, that's comfortable, like you said, with your favorite blanket or in your favorite chair. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Because you want to be comfortable while you're reading. You don't want to be sitting there in, like, a stiff chair that you're like, oh yeah, I'm reading and it's really fun and it's really great.
And I think it defines, you know, your experience in that space. You get to really just kind of relax into reading.
Exactly. Still keeps it fun.
I also think that another great tip was, you know, so we're on a roll, right? We're reading. And then it's like we just hit a wall of burnout. And we just need to take a break. Mm-hmm. And so give yourself permission to take that break, to avoid the burnout. And I think that's good, you know, whether you're reading or exercising or whatever goals you have, it's okay to take a day off. So I'm giving you permission, Kelsey, and giving myself permission to not feel guilty for taking a day off.
Might be hard to do. Not good at those days off or not being busy, but we'll give it a shot. So another helpful tip to keep you going on, you know, succeeding in your New Year's resolutions of reading more is to get good recommendations. So oftentimes, you know, we can find ourselves like standing in front of a bookshelf and being like, I have no idea what I want to read. So you can always trust us here on the first 50 pages, but not only that, you can stop by your local public library. Librarians love to be able to give recommendations. You can listen to our segment on KWIT for Check It Out. You know, we give weekly book recommendations on there.
I love my friends. I don't want to put them on blast, but I don't always get the best book recommendations from my friends because they might not like to read the same things that I do. Like, I'm not in the mood for, like, a quirky romance. I need, like, a dark crime story, and they don't understand that side of me, and they just want me to read this really good book. Although, if I'm going to switch it up, I might try. But look for great recommendations, because you don't always get them from the people in your social circle.
If you would like to keep your friendships, maybe stop by the library, and we'll help you out with some recommendations, rather than getting recommendations from your friends.
Here's the beauty about a librarian. They are going to match you to your reading interests, to your mood, to your style. They really want to make that connection for you with a great book.
And we really have no stake in whether you hate the book that we recommend for you or, you know, that you really liked it and you want something else. Like, we're there to definitely help you find something else, but we're not going to be mad at you if you don't like it or you don't read what we recommend to you. Like, maybe your friends might be.
Yeah, pro tip, get good recommendations. And the library is here to help you. And again, you should use the library because books can be expensive.
Oh, for sure.
So if you have a reading goal, use the library. Because when you don't finish that book, you're not going to feel so bad about it because you didn't spend $20 or $30 on that brand new hardcover. So obviously, from all the things I've been saying, I'm a huge supporter of this next tip, to embrace the do not finish, the DNF. Do not force yourself to read books that you hate or that you are not in the mood for. It takes the fun out of it and it slows you down. I say give it a fair chance, like maybe the first 50 pages. But it's okay to call it quits early and without shame. Life is too short to read books that you hate. And I love this phrase, read what you're hungry for.
I like it. Simple, but to the point.
Read what you're hungry for.
But don't actually eat the book. That's frowned upon.
I think there's one more thing to touch on about our reading goals. I think we have to be realistic. Do we really want to read more? Or are we just nostalgic for a time in our life when we had more time to do everything, including reading? Sometimes I feel that way. If you don't feel like reading more this year, pick out a few books that you might enjoy. And then maybe in a few years, you'll have more time. There will always be great books to discover. So yeah, be realistic. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
Don't set yourself up to read 50 books if you know that you do not have time or energy or the will to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sense setting yourself up to fail. You know, nobody likes to not fulfill their New Year's resolutions. I mean, it happens more often than not that we maybe don't fulfill them, but you don't want to just already, you know, set yourself 18 steps behind up to fail. And selfishly, this last tip, I'm going to personally plug this one, is join a book club. This could be because I lead the library's book clubs for adults, but really, truly, you should join a book club. And if you're wondering why join a book clubs are a great way to hold yourself accountable to your reading goal. You're encouraged to finish the book by a certain date. You know, it offers the opportunity to discuss your thoughts with others, and it can kind of help relieve some of that pressure of, ooh, what do I read next? According to a 2016 article on Bustle.com, researchers in the UK found the secret to a longer and healthier life. Sounds great, right? You can live longer by joining a book club. Well, it's not, you know, the elixir or immortality you might have hoped for. Book clubs can help you maintain your social connections when you're at risk of withdrawing.
Here's where I make a confession. I feel like I do this in a lot of episodes. Here's my confession.
We learn all of Jen's deep, dark secrets.
Okay, so my confession is I have never been a part of a book club officially. And I find that hard to believe. But I haven't. I've never joined a book club. And it breaks my heart. I so desperately want to be in a book club and read good books with my friends. Or not even my friends. And because I'm always working.
Yeah.
When the libraries, I read the books.
She needs to like peek in on book
club. I do peek in. But I'm always working when book club is going on. So I've never attended open book club at the library. So yeah, maybe I have to start my own book club this year. I don't know. That could be a goal. I'm going to work up to that. But yeah, I've never been a part of a book club. But now I'm going to flip the script because I want to know more as I, you know, get myself geared up for book clubs. Because yeah, I want to live a longer, happier life with social connections and great reading recommendations. So Kelsey's official title at the library is Reader Services Specialist. So today, I'm going to interview Kelsey because one of the many hats that she wears in her professional life is that she facilitates Open Book Club for the Sioux City Public Library. And I want to talk to Kelsey today about why book clubs are so incredible, because I know they are near and dear to her heart. So I need to know, how will a book club make my life better?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay, I could go on an hour-long discussion on how a book club will make your life better. But, like I've mentioned, you know, book clubs are a way for us to really connect with other people and kind of really interact very socially. But it's, you know, truly fun to discuss books with others. You know, it kind of gives us insight into how other people might have interpreted a book, you know, which can sometimes even change how we feel about a book. There's been plenty of book club sessions that I've gone in and been like, man, I really didn't like this book. But then some tiny little nugget of insight that somebody has, I'm like, oh. That, you know, it really truly changes potentially maybe how you feel about a character or a certain situation in the book.
It's what I'm missing in my life.
And book clubs are a way to, you know, help you change up the genres that you're reading. You know, they're a good way to avoid book hangover, and they really, you know, challenge ourselves to read outside our regular author's genres and interests. And that's truly what Open Book Club is meant to do at the Sioux City Public Library. You know, the name is truly descriptive of what it is.
So yeah, so what is Open Book Club?
Sure. So at the Sioux City Public Library, it's our book club that is mainly geared towards adults, so, you know, kind of 18 and older. But Open Book Club exists as a monthly meeting on the first Monday of the month. We meet at our Perry Creek location as well as our Morningside branch location, so you can go during the day or you can go in the evening. And what we're there for is to kind of branch out of our own reading ruts and really kind of try to challenge ourselves to read a wider variety of things. So in any given year, we could read a mystery, a true crime novel, a Western, you know, a piece of literary fiction. It's just kind of all of these different books that, you know, are good for us to have in a group discussion. So you kind of get to hear everybody else's opinions and kind of a fun thing to do.
In my research, of course, one of the things that I came across that I thought was very cool about going to a book club at a library is that librarians are facilitators first. So I'm sure that you focus less on participating yourself in the book discussion, but rather I think you probably lead and guide people a little more into those questions or those interesting parts of the book to keep conversations on track. And I'm sure you bring questions in advance.
Oh, yeah. I definitely, bring questions every time. But I mean, sometimes, depending on the book, I don't even need to go to my list of questions. Everybody just jumps in right away and starts just discussing, and it naturally just has, like the ebbs and flows of conversation. And, sometimes I have to cut everybody off that I'm like, okay, we're past 6 o'clock. They need to close the library. We need to go now. But yeah, librarians definitely kind of are there as a facilitator. So, don't feel like if you're going to go to book club that you have to participate. You can truly talk as much or as little as you want to. We have plenty of, readers that just like to be listeners for the discussion. And then we have plenty of people that really like to share each and every opinion that they have about a book. There's definitely a spot for every single person.
And I think that open book club, you can see more diversity in the group of people that you discuss the book with. And that focus on the book discussion with socializing as that secondary part. Where if you're meeting up with your friends, it might be hard to get to the book discussion because it becomes social. But I think at a library, you get to really focus on the book.
Yeah, and it's definitely there's a wide variety of ages, backgrounds, circumstances. People that come to Open Book Club is kind of that thing of, you kind of become friends with them or you make that connection, but you're not necessarily feeling like you have to share an opinion that matches somebody else's or, that you have to feel the same way about a book. Open Book Club allows you to really just have your own particular thoughts and feelings about a book, and you're able to share that in a comfortable, safe space, and there can be that discussion where, you don't have to agree. Those usually make for the best book discussions, because if you go in and everybody likes the book, then kind of takes away a lot to talk about, because you're like, oh, great, everybody liked it. Okay, we have another 55 minutes. What are we going to talk about?
So what makes for a good book club selection?
Sure. So definitely it needs to be discussion worthy. You don't want to pick a book, kind of like I mentioned, that everybody is either going to hate or they're going to love. That really kind of leaves little room for the discussion to grow. You want to kind of have multiple themes, whether it's, family relationships, whether there's current issues that you're discussing, like race, politics, the climate, etc. Different time periods can be helpful, or historical figures, relationship dynamics, diversity. You really want to make sure that there is kind of enough meat to the book, that there is kind of enough to unpack about it. Well-crafted or complex characters can be really helpful, or, really intricate storylines.
I think those would be my favorite.
You want to have an interesting plot. Even multiple storylines can be helpful, so you can talk about different character interactions, or if there's stories taking place in two different time periods, you're able to address both of those and maybe how they connect or how they don't connect.
That's a tall order.
It is. It is. Also, one last thing, you don't want the book to be too long or people are not going to have time to finish it. So you're not going to want to pick 600 plus page books. It might be a really good book, but it's going to make it hard for people to check it out from the library and have enough time to read it in order to make the discussion.
So what have been some of your favorite book discussions?
Sure. I won't lie to you. Jen did give me some of these questions ahead of time. I had to be able to prepare some of my answers a little bit, but it really made me think about, the last 4 years of leading Open Book Club, what have been some of my most memorable, some of my favorites. Last year, we had some really great and really truly thought-provoking discussions, but probably two of my favorites were They're There by Tommy Orange and Little Faith by Nicholas Butler. I would say in the years before that, I really liked when we talked about Chloe Benjamin's The Immortalists, Tara Westover's memoir, Educated, that was a big hit. It was probably one of our most highly checked out books. And then also a couple years ago, we did an author spotlight on Frederick Bachman, and I'm a huge fan of his. So that was kind of nice for me to kind of, still be the facilitator, but also be a huge fan of this author's work to kind of get, you know, Open Book Club's interpretation of, you know, he's written so many different books and kind of see if they had favorite characters or favorite situations. That was kind of interesting to do.
I picked up Chloe Benjamin's The Immortalists because it was on the Open Book Club list, and I read it and I loved it and I did a check it out for it. But I could see how that would be an excellent discussion book. Like, it is a book that when you read it, you want to talk with somebody about what happened in it. And I think there was a check it out for There.
Mm-hmm.
I think about Barb.
Yep.
Barb Gross did a check it out for There by Tommy Orange. Yeah, because that was on the best, on a lot of best of lists in 2018. So yeah, I can see how those would be great book discussions. So book clubs inherently do have challenges to them. How do you deal with some of those challenges? Like making sure everybody gets to have some input.
So kind of whenever I start off a book club session, I usually, as much as I can, try to let the discussion, you know, free flow as much as possible. If I feel as kind of maybe getting off track, or maybe there are, you know, two or three people that are truly dominating the discussion, you know, I'll kind of politely, you know, kind of butt in and ask if anyone else had a thought on a particular character or situation in the book. I'll be honest, though, our open book clubbers are really great, and they, you know, help me to kind of make sure each person who wants to share is heard. So sometimes if I don't, you know, see that somebody's ready to speak, somebody else will jump in and be like, oh, like, were you going to say something? You know, that they're usually pretty good about making sure that everybody has a chance to share their opinion or share their thoughts. So
that's awesome.
That's probably not the norm out there, but
it just gives me warm, fuzzy feelings. Makes me want to go to open book club.
Yeah, it just kind of shows, you know, that you can have all these different types of discussions and have differing opinions and not necessarily feel the same way about a book. And kind of another way that we're able to, you know, make sure that everybody's heard at book club is in our December meetings each year. I really try to solicit their input to help, you know, pick our selections for that next year. So there's kind of this ownership in what we're doing for Open Book Club. It's another way that we can all, you know, share recommendations and everybody can give an opinion on what we'll be reading for that next year. So even if books, you know, don't make the list because we only, you know, have a certain amount of months in the year to read all these different books, I send that full list of suggestions out to everyone after that meeting, and it kind of serves as a handy go-to list of recommendations for book clubbers kind of in between the different book club books.
And then they have a list of other great recommendations.
Yeah.
So Kelsey, what books are you most excited about for this year's Open Book Club?
So, really enjoying the books that we have this year. I've kind of really grown my appreciation for nonfiction over the years. So I'm super excited for us to tackle Midnight in Chernobyl, The Untold Story of the World's Greatest Nuclear Disaster by Adam Higginbotham. And then I'm also excited for us to read Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland by Patrick Radden Keefe. So kind of two totally different sides of nonfiction. But I haven't actually read a lot about Chernobyl or really know a ton about it other than, you know, huge nuclear disaster. But Adam's book is, you know, really draws on, you know, more than a decade's worth of research, recently declassified files, hours of interviews. So it's kind of a definitive account of the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear power plant disaster. And it's truly like this powerful investigation into how propaganda, secrecy, and myth have kind of obscured the true story of one of this greatest disasters.
And if you liked the Chernobyl series on HBO, which we've talked about, people have, you know, Sarah Lee loved that series. I think she said she even watched it twice.
Yeah. So, I know she's kind of excited to read the book too. She's picked that one.
This would be a book for you if you liked the series.
And it's been a while since we've done a true, like, true crime one. So it's kind of interesting to take on Patrick Radden Keefe's book, Say Nothing. It's been on a lot of the best of book lists for the year, but it documents the notorious abduction and murder of IRA Troubles victim Jean McConville in 1972 Belfast, and explores kind of how the case reflected the brutal conflicts of Northern Ireland and kind of their ongoing repercussions. You know, it truly conjures a world of passion, betrayal, vengeance, and anguish.
No, I'm going to have to add it to the list, Kelsey.
I think it just kind of goes to show that, you know, nonfiction, although, you know, it's the truth and the facts and all the stuff, like, it can have as much suspense and all of that, you know, like that a good mystery or psychological thriller could.
And Actually, I skipped this question, but I wanted to talk about some of the trends happening in book clubs.
Oh, sure.
And one of those trends that I came across was nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really are on point with Open Book Club in having picked a couple, you know, really intriguing nonfiction selections.
So, you know, we'll give ourselves a pat on the back for staying on trend with our Open Book Club choices. But I also really like that we're going to tackle our first horror novel, at least since I've been at the library this year. We're going to read Imaginary Friend by Stephen Chbosky.
That's on my reading list.
Yeah.
That's a big book, though.
It is a big book. But, you know, everybody's kind of knows that he's known for his, you know, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. But this one is totally different. I was reading about it before we picked it for book club, and it's intense and creepy and super great. And maybe it's because I had our horror podcast episode in the back of my mind when we were trying to pick books for this year, but I was like, huh.
And that was, I saw that book
on
a lot of best horror books recommendations for last year. So I think it'd be really excellent.
And I think it'll be interesting because I'm sure a lot of our open book lovers have read The Perks of Being a Wallflower. So it'll be kind of interesting to see, you know, their thoughts or, you know, hear their thoughts about how his writing changes from, you know, writing a teen fiction book to this horror novel. And, you know, are there any comparisons that you can make, even though he's writing in two vastly different genres? So I think that could be kind of a good discussion. And of course, we're going to read it in October, so we'll fully give in to the spooky.
So I have already read one of the books on the Open Book Club list. Is it the March book, Nothing to See Here,
mm-hmm.
by Kevin Wilson?
I think it's March. Don't quote me on that.
It was fantastic. I loved it. And I didn't necessarily know that I would, but, you know, I loved the flawed, quirky characters. It was funny but offbeat, and the writing style was engaging. And if you're a fan of Kevin Wilson's books and you've read his other books, I think this is one that you will also love. You know, it deals with the themes of unexpected motherhood with an element of fantasy, because it's about the children of a wealthy and powerful Tennessee politician who went emotionally stressed. Catch fire. Literally, they catch fire. And then they hire the stepmother's like high school friend to be a governess for the children. And it really was a love letter to the weirdness and difficulties of children and parenting. But it was so fun to read. I devoured that book. And it's not a very long book, but I think I read it in less than a week. I loved it. It was a great, great read. So definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, so Jen might have to sneak in to book club on that one.
I would love to hear.
Just put a little sign out at the desk, like, at book club. Come in there if you need me.
Yes, come join. So, Kelsey, what advice do you have for someone, maybe like me, who is wanting to start a book club?
So, kind of my simplest advice is to just do it, you know, you just kind of have to really get out there and just want, like, kind of have that want and that drive to start one. I mean, it does require a little bit more prep than you might think, but it's well worth it and it's super easy. You know, you want to kind of decide on the tone and the theme of the club. Like, are you going to pick one where you only read historical fiction, or are you only going to read nonfiction? You know, that can kind of help iron out any issues or, you know, kind of answer any questions that you might have when you're trying to start one. You really want to get the word out, you know, whether it's going to be just your friend group or if you're going to advertise it on social media or kind of how you're going to get people to be members of your book club. You'll want to figure out the best meeting time and kind of how often you'll meet. You'll want to choose a location and then kind of, you know, finalize how books and discussion leaders will be chosen. But if you, you know, run into any issues with that, I'm definitely free to offer advice at the library. I'll do my best to help you out, but I promise it's not that bad.
And if I chicken out and I decide that I can't start my own book club, I have done some research into some online book clubs because this is the world we live in. We don't necessarily have to gather together in the same physical space, although that is definitely a benefit of being part of a book club. But there are a lot of great online book clubs that you can join right now. So if you don't have the time, maybe Monday nights don't work for you, you know, to go to Open Book Club, or you don't live in Sioux City, you're listening from far, far away. There were some really fun and fantastic online book clubs that we did a little research on. I think, you know, probably one of the most popular, at least maybe for my demographic right now, is the Reese Witherspoon's book club. She does it, you know, pretty much mostly through Instagram, mm-hmm. And her media company, Hello Sunshine. And many, and actually most, of her book recommendations are ending up on the bestseller list now. Mm-hmm. I think, really, she's kind of taken over, like, Oprah's throne of book club goddess. And I have read several of her books, and I've really liked them. Her January selection is on my to-be-read list, and the second that it comes in for me, I'm going to drop everything to read it. Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed.
Oh, that one's on my list, too.
And Kylie Reed was a recent graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, where she was the recipient of the Truman Capote Fellowship. She lives in Philadelphia, and this is her first novel. But it is a story about race and privilege, and it's centered around a young Black babysitter, her well-intentioned employer, and a surprising connection that threatens to undo them both. Ooh. And Reese's little plug for the book on Instagram just drew me in. I also heard an author interview mm-hmm. on Morning Edition. So actually, I heard that first before I saw that Reese was recommending it. So I'm super excited.
So it kind of all comes full circle. You hear it on public radio. You hear yes. it from Reese Witherspoon. Okay, we should read it.
I'm super excited to read this book. This is top of my to-be-read list. I know another one that people are into right now, following reading recommendations, and actually Nothing to See Here was mm-hmm. a recommendation on the Read with Jenna.
Yep.
Jenna Bush Hager on the Today Show has a book club also.
She does.
And actually, I think that you told me that Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson mm-hmm. ended up being on back order.
It did.
Through our vendors, so we couldn't get the book
and
right away.
And we're like, oh, that dang Jenna. She just she just keeps recommending all of these books, and then they go on back order. We have to wait a little bit to get some copies. And for you sports fans out there, Andrew Luck, who I think, is he a former quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts?
He did retire under controversy this year.
Dang it.
But his book club is still going.
Yeah, his book club is still going.
Yeah, so book clubs are not just for ladies.
Yeah, exactly. He would like people to know that jocks can be just as literary as anyone else. He has a popular book club and podcast and offers a rookie pick for young readers and a veteran pick for older readers every month.
And they're not just sports themed.
No.
But they were interesting picks. I thought they were really...
It was a pleasant surprise when we were kind of trying to find, you know, what celebrities or personality, you know, famous personalities out there have book clubs. It was a pleasant surprise to see that Andrew Luck has one.
Okay, so to recap, Kelsey. I want to be in a book club.
Yeah.
Because it's fun, right?
Yeah.
And I might live longer. And I could deepen my friendships, get to know people better.
Mm-hmm. All true, all true.
I'll be in the know because I will get to keep up on new releases mm-hmm. and, like, world book news. And hearing other readers' perspectives on the same story might change my ideas mm-hmm. about what a book means. I'm going to stay sharp and motivated and get all the brain benefits that reading provides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to meet new people.
Yep.
I get to do some genre hopping, so I'll be finding different books out of my comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
and maybe I get to even share some of my favorites with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my takeaways from why I need to be in a book club.
Takeaways for not only why you should be in a book club, but why in general we should just resolve to read more in 2020.
Or just resolve to read.
Yeah. Doesn't have to just be 2020.
Just resolve to read. Set yourself some time.
Make it intentional. Always have a book on you.
And keep track of it so the next year, when we're talking about 2021, you can celebrate. Even if you did not finish 150 books, it's still a celebration that you started 150 books.
Exactly. Exactly. This is Kelsey.
And this is Jen. And thank you for listening to the first 50 pages.